Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Roy Curlin. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Roy Curlin. You have your DVM and your PhD, and you're a practicing scientist.
Indeed.
Could you tell us a little bit about your educational background and just a little bit about your background to begin with? Did you go to college and stuff?
Certainly, and thank you for inviting me on here. The very first thing is that your listeners might be able to tell that I speak a little unusually. So I'm not from this country originally, although I am a citizen of this wonderful country now. I am Australian by birth. I grew up in Australia, and I grew up in a very good middle class family in Australia. My mother and father sent me to church and sent me to school, but I did the typical rebellious things that a child will do, and I really fell away from any sort of a faith for quite a long time, actually. I didn't fall away from my intellectual development, and mm-hmm. I went and I got my degree in veterinary medicine. I practiced as a veterinarian, and I subsequently got a PhD in immunology. I came over to the United States, and I worked at a number of institutions over here. I've had a pretty sound scientific career. Unfortunately, my faith and my understanding of the pro-life area in general was not as well developed as my intellectual faculties, unfortunately.
So you wouldn't have considered yourself pro-life through all of these academic achievements?
No, I wasn't, and I don't believe I was in any way actively anti-life mm-hmm. or pro-choice, as they say. I don't like that term. I think it's pro-death, anti-life, whatever. But I wasn't that. In any sort of way. It was more that I just avoided the question. It was uncomfortable. It was irritating. I had been brought up by the scientific establishment to think of things such as working with embryos, et cetera, as being just all reproductive rights and working in that area. Just another area of science. So it was uncomfortable to think about it as anything else. So I discarded the emotional side of it and simply considered the intellectual side of it as just like any other branch of research mm-hmm. to me.
So what, obviously you're now pro-life because you're on mm-hmm. the face of pro-life, so you had some kind of an evolution in your thought process. Mm-hmm. Could you take us a little bit through that? How did you evolve and become pro-life?
Well, that's a long story. I'll try to make it as short as possible. So basically, I went through my intellectual development, and then I met a lovely lady, fell in love, and got married. And this lady happened to be a devout, practicing cradle Catholic, who is, if nothing else, staunchly fierce in her search of the truth. She's actually a scientist herself,
right?
And wouldn't let me put things away into a box in the side of my brain where they couldn't disturb me, but would want to take them out and shake them in front of me and say, you can't just think about this in a dispassionate, intellectually
separate way.
You've got to decide. Is this right or is this wrong? And at that stage, I actually, she was practicing Catholic and I was agnostic at best, atheist probably, because it wasn't, just like the pro-life issue, I wasn't thinking along those lines. I was just mm-hmm. separating off to the side. I'll deal with that at a later time. I'm sure it's important, but I'll deal with this first.
So your intellect was more of, if I can see it, I can understand it.
Yeah.
So you were very scientific.
Scientific.
And, yeah.
Touch it, feel it, the five senses. And that was something that that drove my whole being. I didn't have anything else. But she wouldn't let me get away with that. So after she said, why don't you believe in God? Well, I don't not believe in God, why don't you believe, that a baby in the womb is still a baby? Well, I didn't say that. Well, what do you say? She wouldn't let me get away with it. So I had to come to a decision to say, I'm either going to reject this out of bounds, or I'm going to look at it and prove her wrong.
Right.
And so, by
a scientific approach.
Yeah, Exactly. It was a. It's the way to get a scientist, in fact, to understand, to truly believe in the pro-life message, in fact, and we can go into that at a later stage, if you like, is to really force them to take an objective, dispassionate, unambiguous scientific view of things. And if you do, and if they're honest, they'll be pro-life mm-hmm. also. But so she helped convert me, and I became, and I was actually baptized into the Catholic faith, and became a practicing Christian after that. And then it was not until that point, it was not until I had some faith in God that I became fairly quickly after that. It wasn't instantaneous, but right. over a year or so after that, became pro-life. And it was the same lady who helped me, pushed me that way, which doesn't mean that she bullied me into right. it. It was my own decision. But she wouldn't let me get away with soft and fuzzy
right.
answers
to clear
questions.
She lit the fire underneath you, yeah.
Exactly.
Sparked the fire.
Yeah. So it was not until I understood that there was a God, that that God had a plan for us, and that God has a plan for everyone, including the babies in the womb, mm-hmm. because we're all ex-embryos, aren't we? That indeed forced me to believe that you couldn't be a really good Christian and not be pro-life.
Right. Not standing up for the least of my brothers.
Exactly. So it was a slow and tedious progression that I had to this point, but through the grace from God, I'm here now, and I realize the lack of logic in the position that I had before. And scientists are very logical people, and I think that you can only be a non-pro-life scientist by simply avoiding the issue, by not thinking it through, because I don't believe that a logical scientist can think through this issue in a dispassionate way and not come to the right conclusion.
Right. So you as a scientist, you want your thoughts and your life ordered, and at first you thought that, you know, taking a political or a view on a political thing was not really a scientific, in your scientific thought process. But once you came around to really thinking about it, it really is the logical side once you think about life scientifically.
Absolutely. And even when I got to that point, it was still a sort of a lukewarm sort of a pro-life mentality. Okay, I understand it is a life, and I understand, but you know what? I'm not going to get in anyone's face about it. If they want to make the wrong decision, that's their problem. Mm. And it's more a matter of understanding the true nature of how abhorrent this issue of killing a baby in the womb is, and properly thinking through what it means, and dwelling on it, an unpleasant subject, and you don't want to dwell on it, but when you do, you then start to realize how important it is.
Right.
And so it's for a scientist, it's very easy to bury themselves in their test tubes or their machines and their dials and understand and avoid thinking
right.
about things that are uncomfortable.
In the scientific community, you can kind of push abortion aside, thinking that it's not going to affect you. You know, really, mm-hmm. you can be pro-life, you can be a scientist, and abortion might not ever affect you because, you know, you would personally never have an abortion, obviously, and you obviously wouldn't have your wife have an abortion, so it doesn't affect you. But now that human embryonic stem cells mm-hmm. is a topic that abortion really has provided the in for this research, more and more scientists are going to be pulled into this, either wittingly or unwittingly. I'd like to talk about that when we come back from break, and we're just going to take a quick break, and when we come back we're going to talk to Dr. Curlin about being a scientist and trying to live his faith in the scientific community.
There's a lot of talk in the news about stem cells helping people. Did you know there's a real difference between two distinct types of stem cells? Adult stem cells are already helping people suffering from at least 69 diseases and injuries. On the other hand, embryonic stem cells haven't cured anything, and some scientists want to harvest them using the questionable process of nuclear transfer, just another name for human cloning. Adult versus embryonic stem cells, there's a real difference. Think about it.
Sure, I signed the consent form, but I didn't really read it. I needed money to pay my college bills, so I sold my eggs to the fertility clinic. The procedure was really painful, and my mom was upset. Now I find out that it might cause kidney failure, ovarian tumors, and sterility. Some women even die from it.
Embryonic stem cell research will require millions of eggs, and women will pay a terrible price.
Welcome back. Now, human embryonic stem cell research is just one topic that is confronting scientists, and scientists of faith need to take a stand. But do you find yourself having a hard time living your faith in the scientific community, or do you find challenges in working in the scientific field?
That's a great question. It's, I guess it's, I can live my faith, so to speak, but I have to live it in the closet to some degree, because the nature of the scientific community is one of agnosticism, if at best, and atheism in most of its expressions, and it becomes a challenge when issues such as embryonic stem cell research come up, which are abhorrent to those of us with faith. An understanding of the of what we believe in regard to God and our religion, it becomes very difficult to know how to deal with situations around that in regard to what to say, what to do, what not to do. It is often the case that many people who are scientists and men of and women of faith will just try to avoid situations where mm-hmm. discussions occur, or that they have to participate in some of these apparent scientific practices.
And it does happen, like I said, more and more all the time, with the human embryonic stem cell research becoming more and more prevalent. Do you think, and I know you mentioned that your wife was always searching for the truth, and we as Christians know that, you know, the truth is Jesus Christ, and there's no truth separated from God. So I teach science, and I teach the children that, you know, science is just a better means to understand God and his creations. Do you think you have to be a man of faith or a woman of faith to be a good scientist?
I think it certainly will improve it. I think you can do science without faith, because science is a matter of using the five senses to understand the world. Really, you use your fancy machines, but you've still got to see it, hear it, feel it, touch it, to be able to record your findings. But to truly understand science is to understand the mind of God. And we'll never understand science completely, and thus I think there's an arrogance about scientists who don't believe in God that makes them poorer scientists. I do think that's the case. I think you can conduct good, mediocre science and not be of faith, but I don't think you can really understand the nature of what you're doing without faith. Because if we believe that God is the God of the universe, who created everything and the laws that control everything, then science is simply an uncovering of
right.
what is there, and it's an uncovering of God's plan in the universe. And without that picture, you only have part of a painting. You only have the outline. You don't have it colored in.
You mentioned the arrogance, and I think this is the stumbling block for many scientists. I think you, not only do you need to be in search of the truth, which I believe most scientists are in search of the truth, but I think you have to be humble. Because there's so many times, and again, I teach my kids, there's so many times that you have a hypothesis, and if it turns out that when you test the hypothesis, it does not come out how you guessed, then you have to be willing to admit that you were wrong. And there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong in that, because you've learned something. So I think some scientists get into the habit of proving their own hypotheses, mm-hmm. At all costs, without, introducing the idea of humility when they're wrong. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, the greatest scientists ever were all deists. They all believed in God. Albert Einstein, used to argue with lots of lesser scientists about, that he was understanding the laws of nature, because he said there are laws. It's not, Niels Bohr, I think he said, God doesn't play dice. In other words, there are laws governing these things. It's not just random chance. Good science means understanding God. But the arrogance of the scientists is deeper than that. Sometimes it actually creates a situation where the scientist doesn't want to believe in God. And scientists believe, because I'm a scientist, I understand the working of nature, and therefore I don't need God the picture. And that's ultimate arrogance, because it just needs a couple of simple questions to unmask it. And I'm talking about very erudite, well-read, popular scientists who we often see on TV, who don't believe in God. And it's, you say, you know, they say you don't believe in God because there's the Big Bang. Really? What happened before the Big Bang? Well, it was a singular point of singularity. Ah, where'd it come from?
Yeah.
And they'll just, they don't know. Because the reality is, those that work in those, do the theoretical physics about things such as that, do not have equations that will allow them to understand that. And they don't understand it, but yet they'll do everything possible to say that there isn't a God. People who don't believe in God, as far as, say, you know, the creation of humankind, mm-hmm. for example, or animals, they would rather believe, and there are scientists who have said this, that the Earth was populated by spores or bacteria from outer space, and that's where we all came from. But it just takes a very simple question, say, well, where did they come from? And you keep on going back until you say, you can't.
It takes as much faith to believe that as it would be that God decreed.
A very famous nun said, very wise nun, who is actually on TV, called Mother Angelica, for those of you who may have seen a program on her network, said, you can't get nothing from, you can't get something from nothing. It's a simple but very wise statement that says, you know, if you don't believe in God, what do you believe in? Because you can't get something from nothing. Things just don't spontaneously come out of nowhere without something to make them mm-hmm. come out. Thomas Aquinas says there's got to be an ultimate prime mover, something to start it. And that's God.
And a lot of people will criticize Christians who will criticize the use of human embryonic stem cell research, saying that we want to, you know, hold back the tide of knowledge and blah, blah, blah. And it's so interesting, if you go back in time, many of our really, really good scientists were men of faith.
Absolutely.
I just realized that, we all always knew Mendel was a priest.
He was a monk, right.
Copernicus, I didn't realize he was a priest as mm-hmm. well. And so the science has been in cahoots with the faith for a very, very long time. And what puzzles me is nowadays, and I think this is true not in just the scientific community, but all around, I think people believe that they can separate their faith from their occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people I think we need to reach. You know, you can't separate your faith from your everyday life. How do we reach the people that are scientists who do believe in God, you go to church every Sunday, and yet will turn around or turn the other way, or even promote a horrific science such as human embryonic stem cell research?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. If we could answer that, I'd be very pleased. But basically, I think it's with giving them the truth, challenging them to answer questions about the faith, being very careful, of course, because in our workplaces, many times you can't talk about those sort of things. But where you see opportunities to let them think about questions that they otherwise wouldn't have thought about in regard to these things, even we just ask them as a question. It's often a very good thing to use in places where you aren't allowed to speak. You know, many government offices and many industries, you're not allowed to speak about the faith, mm-hmm. or you get sued these days. But asking a question can often be used in a very disarming way. very difficult to attack somebody for the asking a question, and yet you can really get to the heart and soul of some people by asking questions. Simply, so you have a scientist there who's working in his lab and wants to tell you about the wonderful findings that he's had with using these embryonic stem cells. And you bite back the bile rising in your throat, and you just say, "Wow, didn't know we were using those here. When did that happen?" And then they'll say it, and saying that, yeah, because there's a lot of people in society don't like that, and they'll go, "Oh, yeah, but that's just backward thinking." And, "Well, I don't know. I sometimes wonder about it myself, because they come from little humans, and it worries me sometimes." And you can sort of disarm them by saying, not attacking, but saying, "Oh my goodness, I hadn't thought about this so deeply, and it worries me. And what do you think?" And sometimes they might, and I've seen this happen actually. They'll go away and they'll, "Oh yeah, whatever." And then 2 or 3 weeks, 2 or 3 months, or in one case, a couple of years later, they'll come to you and they'll say,
"You were right.
You made me think about things that I didn't want to think about. And you changed what I'm doing."
It's planting seeds, really.
It's planting those seeds. A scientist is an arrogant person who needs to be convinced, and they need to convince themselves. And you can't do it by pushing them, ramming it home. But a scientist is, if they're any good of a scientist, a person who needs to believe that they have access to the truth anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If they don't, it goes against all of their training. And if you plant a seed that maybe they don't have the truth and there's something else, it'll worry them, even if subliminally at first. But it's a tough one. It is a tough one. I always find the asking of questions. I'm a great fan of Socrates and the Socratic method of a debate.
Teaching, yeah.
And teaching by simply asking the question and letting the person take themselves into the corner.
Even if it's a rhetorical question at that point.
Yeah,
just something that they have to just sit back and think about, and you don't really expect an answer.
What do you think, Dr. X, about these people who don't like embryonic stem cells? Why do you think it is they don't like it? What do you think?
Yeah. So why did you, if you think back, why do you suppose you became a scientist? What drew you to this field of science?
For me, science was predominantly an intellectual pursuit. I got into science. I'm a veterinarian as well as a scientist, and I really got into science through intellectual pursuit and through wanting to work with animals. I wanted to work with horses and cows. I did work on farms and things. I loved playing with cows and horses in Australia and working as a jackaroo, a cowboy. And but my dad was smart enough to know that you're not going to make a reasonable living as a cowboy, even though that sounded good at the time to me.
Parents will do that.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to do, because I was fascinated by intellectual pursuits, was I wanted to be a theoretical physicist. And that doesn't usually lead to terribly profitable enterprises. So my dad said, "Think again." I said, "Well, science, animals, guess I'll become a vet," which led me to an interest in vaccines and immunology. I did a PhD in immunology and went through that way. So I wasn't driven to any understanding of the faith. I was driven into science because of intellectual pursuits. But that brought me to looking at things from an objective fashion. I eventually got into faith through my wife, who was also a scientist, who made me think of these difficult truths, like I said. It wouldn't let me get away with not thinking about them. And as a good scientist, I wanted to be sure that I was going down the right way, and eventually it led me to become pro-life. And I think you have a slightly different story, don't you?
Well, yeah, when we were talking before the show, and it was a real epiphany for me, because I guess you kind of assume that people get into things because of the same thinking that, you know, where you're coming from, but I remember wanting to become a scientist because I wanted to study diseases and I wanted to help bring cures to people. So I guess I thought all scientists, you know, got into it for this altruistic, method of trying to be able to help people. But after hearing your experience, it made me realize, you know, no, not everybody thinks the same way. So it helps me to understand why some scientists don't naturally, you know, bring their faith to work, don't naturally go towards the pro-life issues, and how they can separate themselves from that ideal. So I guess it was really eye-opening for me.
It's good if you think about it from that point of view, isn't it? Because it means that we both come to it from very different, almost different ends of the spectrum, and there are probably scientists all the way along that spectrum, and that trying to understand where people have come from, but the one thing that drives a scientist is understanding or believing in truth, and that real truth lies in Christ, and that getting there eventually one way or another is, whether you come from this end or this end, leads you to ultimately, if you're truthful, becoming pro-life.
Right.
I think that's a good lesson, because I didn't think of it. I thought all scientists did it as an intellectual pursuit, you see.
Now, that's really a great battle plan. You know, we really need to see where the scientists are along that path, because they are somewhere along there, and we need to gather them in and bring them to the truth. Because I think deep down, all scientists really want to know the truth, because it's foolish to scientifically foolish to follow an untruth. And so bringing them to the truth that especially human embryonic stem cells are coming from real human beings, and that is not going to help us, pursuing that is not going to help us as a people in any pursuit.
Yeah, because even scientists, although scientists are smart people, even scientists, telling a scientist, well, it's just an embryo, but it's a human embryo. It's not going to be a deer or a tadpole or a panda bear. It's a human. Even sometimes it's an epiphany for scientists who otherwise might have string of degrees after their names and go, oh my goodness, I never really thought of it like that.
And it's the same scientist, you know, who help, you know, to can look at the turtle eggs in Florida and want to protect them, because they know that they're going to be turtles. And if you don't protect those turtles, they won't become turtles.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
if we can look at the animal world as you know, something worth protecting, we can definitely look at the human aspect of it and protect our children. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you talk to your family and friends about the things that you've heard about. And we hope when you look in the mirror the next time, you'll realize yours is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.